morning, everyone, and welcome. Including in this case, Ambassador Fedna. Welcome. Welcome. Everyone, the meeting is on. Right. Deputy Solicitor General and your team, you are heartily welcome. I'm sure we all have copies of the program. If you don't, just indicate it will be made available to you. Okay. By way of starting, we will request the delegation from the Commission for Gender Equality to introduce themselves. The Auditor General's office to do the same. Members of Parliament to introduce themselves as well. So that by the time we engage, we at least know who we engage with. Now, before we do that, may I make a request that we all switch our cellular phones off. I already switched mine off. As we engage, we are being recorded. So if the phone rings, even if it's on silent, it affects the recording process. But for the time that was ringing, nothing will be recorded. So we're making a request that bear with us for this 1.5 hours or 2 hours or whatever it's going to be for this short time that we'll be having this engagement. Right. Let me hand over to Ms. Schulze. My spelling is correct. I'm assuming that as the acting chairperson, she is the head of the delegation to lead that process of the delegation introducing themselves so that we can start.
Thank you very much. It's actual gender, so that normally institutions like this are chaired by women, but in this case, I'm Mr. Schulze.
My sincerest apologies for what happened here. I see Ms. M. Show.
I'm transgender, there's no problem, Chair. Let me introduce the CCE delegation. I'm Mr. Banozele Schulze. I'm the deputy chairperson. I'm acting as a chairperson because we don't have a chairperson at the moment. And our delegation comprised of.
Yeah, no, let's allow them to introduce themselves so we can hear their voices.
That's fine.
My name is just switch the mic on. Einer des Moschadi Kutub, der ist im Kifa Nijabo.
My name is Keke Gomae, I'm Chief Executive Officer. My name is Kana Ilani, former CEO of the Commission on Gender Equality, last week at the CGE, 2013.
I am Jesus Swani, the part-time commissioner.
I'm Kinosini Ruti, Commissioner.
I'm Janine Hicks, Commissioner.
I'm the Rekir, Commissioner.
Kamraj Anirudra, Parliamentary Officer.
I'm Yvette Abrams, Commissioner.
I'm Omo Maitre, Commissioner.
Good morning. I'm the Mori Fogata, former Chairperson of the CG.
Well, that was not for audible.
I am the legal commissioner.
All right. Thank you very much. Kat.
My name is Tembe Gile Makoyiko, Deputy Auditor General.
My name is Darren from Season. I'm currently acting as the BE for the sports study.
Good morning, my name is
Freddy
Gwenda. I'm Senior Manager responsible for the Commission for Gender Equality.
Thank you very much. Could we, Member of Parliament, also introducing themselves?
Salamani Anas, member of the committee.
Faith Mkambi, member of COPPA.
Thank you, Chair. Mark Steele, member of COPPA.
Pete Pretorius, member of COPPA.
Naveen Singh, member of COPPA.
Mary Peterson, member of Women, Children and Persons with Disability.
Hausmacher, a member from the Committee on Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio on Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities.
And the name?
My name is Barbara, the surname is Thompson.
Good morning, my name is Sarotela Mudine, a member of the Portfolio Committee on Women, Children and People with Disabilities.
Good morning, my name is Grace Taigen, the member of the Portfolio Committee on Women, Children and Youth and People with Disabilities. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Denise Robinson, and I'm also a member of the Portfolio for Women, Children and People with Disabilities.
Good morning, I'm Patty Duncan, I'm also a member of the Committee on Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities.
Good morning, I'm Roy Ainsley, member of SCOPA.
Amanda Bailey, of SCOPA.
Good morning, I'm Tapete Chibwan, member of
COPPA. All right, thank you very much. I'm Kumbe Temba Kuti. I chair this committee. Well, as you would have noted with your program, it is very unusual, and I'm sure it is the first time we have our program like this as a committee. Otherwise, we usually divide our work into focus areas. But after the briefing by the Auditor General, we were not sure where to start and how to develop focus areas, because things appeared
too bad for us to know where to start and where to end. So we just told the comrades here that, well, you'll start where you're going to start because you don't know where to start. So that is the first anomaly, that's the first sign to members that today we are engaging with an entity from a completely different perspective from what we're used to. I want to once again welcome you and appreciate the fact that you have made time to be with us, and especially those who are no longer in the employ of the Commission for Gender Equality, but who at some point in time within the period under review had some role to play in steering the affairs of the entity. May I also indicate that our intention is to interact with you to be able to understand some of the difficulties that have been identified by the Auditor General, by the Auditor General's office here to assist us in that process. And all we're looking for is responses that seek to give context and give clarity on why certain things happened or why certain things did not happen. More especially and most importantly, insofar as it has a bearing on the management of the funds that the Commission received from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. The policy issues, the programs of the entity, that is the base of the Portfolio Committee. Our main interest is in how the resources that were put at your disposal were utilized to achieve the objectives that you had set for yourself. It is our belief in this committee that for any entity or even department to be able to implement its program, the fundamental thing is its ability to manage the resources for them. Because your programs are implemented by using resources or the money that you have. So if there are areas of grayness around that, we always have an interest to have those clarified. Having said that, may I say that we have invited the minister, as we always do, responsible for women, youth, children, and people with disabilities, to be here with us. We understand she's out of the country, she's in Brazil. We then wanted to have the Director General of that department. We understand that since last year or up until now, or at least for today, that department does not have a Director General. So there's no one to come from that department. Right. Justice and Constitutional Development. It appears that the Director General did not receive our letter from her PA. So they are not here. The Deputy Speaker of the National Assembly, who was also invited because some nine institutions report to Parliament, have prior engagement that she could not extricate herself from. So she's equally not here. So comrades, all we have in front of us are the commissioners and people who are in the management and those who were previously in this commission. Be that as it may, I do want to say
the establishment of the CEU is a direct injunction of the Constitution for no other reason than to support the democracy that we have and the democracy that we repeatedly fought for. And any failure on the part of any Chapter 9 institution, it is actually a defeat of the Constitution itself. And it is a direct threat to the democracy that we have in a substantive sense, beyond the paper that is written on. I am not sure how familiar you are with the report that was commissioned by this Parliament, National Assembly, chaired by Professor Kala Akman, to look at Chapter 9 institutions. I'm sure that the outgoing speaker did not have a very kind word to say about the commission in terms of its ability to fulfill its mandate as expected and stated in the Constitution. Now, in relation to your program and what you do to fulfill your concern mandate, I'm sure the portfolio committee can talk very much on that. But our focus will, to a very, very large extent, focus on the resources that were made available to you by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and how these were managed or otherwise. I see that in 2007-2008 you received a grant of 39.7 million from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. And in 2008-2009 it was increased to 46.2 million. Whether that was enough or not, that is something else. That is the money you had, and that is the money that you need to account for here in Parliament. And we are aware that it was only at the end of March this year that the annual report was submitted to Parliament. And yet, we had expected it around August, September last year. And of course, it was two annual reports. Other year, there was no report at all. And I don't remember us reading in the ACC a Section 65 letter that explains why the report is not in time and by when the report will be submitted. This is a pervasion of the processes that apply here in Parliament in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. Now, before I hand over to my comrades to talk to the issues as they would have seen them fit, I just want to say that the image that has been foremost in the public eye has been the issue of instability, leadership instability, which we believe has a very direct bearing on the quality of the management process, the internal control process within the organization. We are aware that, well, as Mr. Schulz has indicated, he is an acting chairperson. When have you been acting?
Since August last year, the acting chair of the deputy from 2008
March. Can you repeat that?
Since August last year, started acting as a chairperson.
August last year.
2009.
When did the chairperson leave?
End of July 2009. The 3rd of August, yes.
Okay. Do you have an idea for how long you might be?
That is in the hands of Parliament and the President. So, but as commissioners, we accept to congratulate to the President so that they can actually appoint the chairperson in terms of our acts. The chairperson is appointed by the President.
I see. How many commissioners do you have currently?
We have 9 commissioners.
How many are you supposed to be?
Supposed to be 12.
I see. When have we had the other 3 vacancies?
As I said, the chairperson left last year. So one in vacancy, and another one in July, in June or July last year, Commissioner Mafana left. Another one in November or December 2008, where former Commissioner Mimane Banane left.
Mm. I also see that the Chief Executive Officer is also in an acting capacity. Correct?
That is correct, Honourable Member.
And when?
In terms of the acting CEO position, it was difficult for the Commission to fill that position because we had suspended the
CEO. Since when
acting from June 2009.
To date? Until now?
To date.
Any indication of when we might have a permanent CEO?
We are at an advanced stage of filling the position because we finalized the suspended CEO matter in November last year and we advertised the position and we shortlisted the candidates. And in 2 months' time, we will be having a CEO.
I see. And the gentleman next to you was introduced as an acting CFO. Is that correct?
That's correct, Chairperson.
When has it been?
Since July 2009.
Any idea of how long he might be at?
What decision has been taken by the Commission is that we need to actually make sure that we fill in the process of the CEO. So the CEO will manage the process of appointing senior management. But when we're advertising for this position, we advertise for everything. CEO as well as senior management, so that when you see that vacancy, the CEO will be able to appoint senior management. So I presume that will take plus minus 2 to 3 months because there were other problems that the CEO actually accounted in terms of that, but that would take 2 to 3 months to actually fill that position.
It does appear that the acting in position, very senior position, have been with the Commission for quite some time. Am I correct?
Yes, I'm correct, Chair.
Your own assessment, what impact has had on the running of the Commission, positive or negative?
I think it has been a negative impact on the Commission. And we acknowledge that, and that's why we're actually as commissioners very negative. But people have their own positions that are acting in the region. So they are actually fulfilling 2 positions at the same time. And that has actually made some of the work difficult for some of the people to do. It has actually had a negative impact on the side of the commission.
I see. All right. Comrade, let me start with another thing. And then Comrade Roy, Pretorius, and then
Kiabonga, thank you very much, colleagues. Good morning. Firstly, I want to agree with you, Chair, that one cannot overemphasize the importance of this institution. The Chapter 9 institution. Meant to ensure that post-1994 there are certain imperatives of the new government that are met. But what one reads about the history of this institution in terms of its financial management leaves a lot to be desired.
I also want to express dismay, Chairperson, that three very key role players and or their representatives are not here today. And although I appreciate that many commissioners and others have flown in from all parts of the country to be here, and we don't want to disappoint them, I really don't know what purpose this is going to serve, more than us just getting information from them. But I think the need to interrogate the other very three key role players is going to be necessary in the future. Chairperson, when one looks at this institution here, you look at staffing, we've just received documents. In fact, I mean, the chairperson, you're quite right. We received documents late, we received documents today. We see you very well staffed. Mr. Pete Pretorius, who always, Comrade Pete, who always talks about performance bonuses, will speak about performance bonuses, and you will see that many of them have been paid 18%, 15% performance bonuses. But what performance? But I'm sure we'll go into detail of that a little later. What I'd like to know, Chairperson, is who amongst the colleagues that are here across us is going to be responsible, accept responsibility for mismanagement of this organization in the period that we are dealing with? We've got an annual report before us. Who is going to be answering the questions? Because we need to know. Is it the former chairperson? Is it the former CEO? Is it the current CEO? Who is it going to be? So that we don't have them falling over each other's feet to try and give us answers that may try and please us. Because we need to get to the bottom of the CGE. We need to be able to say at the end of the day whether this is an institution that should continue as a Chapter 9 institution or whether it should just fall away and somebody else takes the responsibility for carrying out the mandate that government has set. Thanks.
Well, just to clear that, I think it's a fundamental question or it's an important question. We always say that accountability is institutional. So the current acting chairperson and the acting CEO have the responsibility to explain issues of the institution. But on a practical note, we have invited the former chairperson, Ms. Gasa, who is here, and the former CEO, Ms. Machaki, who is also here. So they will be able to talk to the issues that they were raising in conjunction with the current leadership. Why they're here. All right, if that was your brief, I'll move on to Comrade Roy.
Now I want to start here with the tabling of the annual report. In your general comments, you made reference to the fact that you've only just now received the annual report. You didn't ask a question as to why this is the case. So I want to turn your statement around into a question. Because as you quite correctly pointed out, that in terms of Section 65, this entity is required to furnish Parliament with annual report and financial statements. And in terms of the rules of Parliament, the guide to tabling of papers in Parliament, that annual report should be done within 5 months of the end of the financial year. If my maths are correct, and they are in fact, I'm not sure, 30 or 31 days in September, I think we're 31, then that should have been done by the 31st of September. Now, we must also note that we have not received, to the best of my knowledge, an annual report of the previous financial year. We've only just, on entering this chamber, received the latest annual report, which makes our engagement with the Commission very, very difficult. It's very difficult to relate the financial statements that we have and the Auditor General's report. It's very difficult because we need to put those in context. And the context we must put those into is the annual report, which we haven't even had now time to read. But be that as it may, the guide to tabling of papers in Parliament requires that if in fact you don't table your report on time, you need to give a written explanation as to why that is the case. And in that written explanation, you should provide the reasons why the report could not be tabled within the required time. And I think the chair is quite correct. I have no knowledge that, in fact, you have given that written explanation. But chair, that is where I would like to stop. No written explanation, but I would like an explanation as to why there is no annual report, why we still have not received an annual report for the previous financial year, and why only today do we have this. What is the problem?
Yeah, why have we not, did we not receive the annual report of 2007, 2008, 2009 in time, or at least on time?
And why no written explanation?
Yeah.
Chair, I would, with you, to respect, I would also put some other questions to my colleagues, if you allow me to do that. But let me, I will ask the former chairperson to explain 2007-2008 report. But 2008-2009, let me explain that one. We, in our written...
Maybe let's start 2007-2008.
Discuss.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is what is called an ambush, because I would imagine that all commissioners, in particular, especially the deputy chairperson, know why the report, what exactly the status of the report. Nevertheless, the CGE has a rather precarious arrangement that we inherited. Which is in the Act of the Commission for Gender Equality. Our submission to Parliament of the report was told by the Department of Justice that it is through the Department of Justice. We were late with the production of the report for various reasons, and we can go into that. I was personally in contact with the Department of Justice. The chief director was responsible for the Commission for Gender Equality. I have here a whole set of letters to the Department of Justice, that chief directorate, as well as Minister Mabandla, Deputy Minister Delange, and Mr. Enver Surti when he came into office, explaining the difficulties that we're having. The difficulties are very simple. The annual report that, the draft annual report that we got was not of quality that deserved to be printed. So to the extent that the CGE had to hire a consultant to try and put together the raw data and ensure that it was a document that was presentable. CGE documents and electronic files will show this, and I think other commissioners will attest to this, especially Commissioner Hicks, who was very closely involved in this process. So there was a remarkable delay because of the quality of work that came from departments and from provinces, as well as commissioners themselves. We had conversations with the Department of Justice, and we were assured by the Department of Justice that a conversation was taking place at that stage in the Portfolio Committee of on Justice and Consumer Development, which was Mr. Eunice Karim. When the AG report came, there was also a remarkable delay with the AG's with the auditing by the AG due to lack of capacity from the CGE and unavailability of documents that was pretty much part of what led to a disqualifier. Now, eventually, we submitted the report to the Department of Justice. The director in my office, Ms. Sima Piele, who was working there, Mr. Johan Johnson, who was the acting CFO of the CGE, as well as other senior members of staff, sent the report to the Department of Justice, again documented to that effect exists. Now, the understanding was that the Department of Justice would then seek to table the report to Parliament. Thank you.
Just on that one, you have Comrade Roy.
Really, I can't accept almost everything you said, because, I mean, I have the PFMO, and I would assume that a person in your capacity is very familiar with the PFMO. And I would suggest you must stop trying to pass the buck to everybody else. The buck should have stopped with you. Don't try and blame the Department of Justice. Don't try and blame the Auditor General. Here's the PFMA. Absolutely very specific. The executive authority for a department or public entity, which is you, must table in the National Assembly. Not before the Portfolio Committee, you know, not before the Department of Justice. It was your responsibility in terms of the PFMA to table this annual report to Parliament. And really, I would, what you ought to be doing is sitting there and saying, admitting your personal failure to do so, and not try and pass the buck to anybody else.
Right. I think the understanding from my side, from what is reading, he should not have relied on the Department of Justice. He had the money, he had the staff, he should have prepared the report and submitted it to Parliament.
But Chairperson, while we are there, we want her to respond on this comment. The bug in this case stopped with her. Unless otherwise we don't know what we're doing here. That again emphasized that shift of blame, not here, not acceptable. The bug stopped with you at the time.
That is our assertion, that you were the people responsible and should have sent the report to Parliament yourself. Why, on this one, report is addressed by the acting CEO to the Speaker of the National Assembly, directly from the entity to the Speaker, and say the Commission is tabling this report in accordance with legal requirements as stated above. I am sure we are in agreement on that one. I think that the committee, we don't think that we should have gone that route in terms of explaining it away through the failures of other people. It was your responsibility as a commission to produce the report and submit it to Parliament.
Chair, before our colleague replies, may I quickly just draw your attention to the Constitution. The Constitution of the Country of the Republic, Chapter 9, which deals with the establishment and governing principles of entities. Chapter 9, Section 181.5. These institutions, referring to institutions such as...
On which page is Chapter 9?
103. 103.
Huh?
103 of the Constitution.
103, yes. Okay.
Chapter 9,
all right.
Section 181.5, the very last item on page 103. Let me just read that. These institutions, and that will refer to the Commission, are accountable to the National Assembly and must report on their activities and the performance of their functions to the Assembly at least once a year. So honestly, I would be very amazed if a person in our colleague's capacity there is not only unfamiliar with the PFMA, but also unfamiliar with the Constitution. And so I think what we need is really just simply an acknowledgement. Yes, I didn't understand the Constitution, or yes, I didn't understand the PFMA. I made a mistake, I'm sorry, but please not to sit here, Chair, and try and pass the buck to everybody else, including her former colleagues.
But I would want us to approach it this way. She has given a response, and we have made our position clear with regard to that. I do not want to see it or look at it as we're not expressing opinion, we're expressing what the law says. So there should be no debate or contestation around that. Ms. Kassa, our position remains that the responsibility was that of the commission and nobody else. Your report should not have gone to the Department of Justice, it should have come to Parliament. And you have the responsibility and the accountability to Parliament. And on that score, you failed the commission, both as commissioners and in your capacity as the chairperson who was supposed to lead and guide the commission to do that which is right in accordance with the legislative mandates that are in place. Right.
Chairperson, there is no debate about the understanding of the PFMA and the understanding of the law. The point is accepted.
Okay.
What I was trying to do was to explain what had happened. And I do think that not only in relation to the submission of the annual report, there are areas that need to be refined in terms of what the Constitution says and what other regulations stipulate. I had no intention to explain anything away. I was simply trying to give you the context of what happened. And if that is the impression that was given or that was accrued, that was not my intention. Thank you.
Right. 2008-2009, what happened?
Chair, we as a commission, as we know that the audit starts on the 1st of June from the region. We were not ready with the financial statement at the time. And there was a requirement.
Why were you not ready? Because you know the CFMA says 2 months after the end of the financial year, you must prepare the financial agreement for the Auditor General.
I accept that, Chair, but in terms of the capacity that we had at the time, it was difficult for us to actually produce that.
That's what I want you to say. I don't work with you, so I don't know what your issues are. That's why I'm asking, why did you not submit, or why did you not prepare in time? Because this was not sprung on you.
We had capacity challenges in the finance department, Chair. All right? Continue. And we, after that, we asked the AG for an extension, which we did not get in writing from the information that I got from the finance, but it was implied. And then the audit started in September. Excuse me. And then after that, it was finalized in November. And then we had to actually, after that, we put together the report, but it was not finalized. It was finalized at the end of January, but there were still other problems with the report itself, and then we could not produce it in time. It was even after that, we were supposed to have it maybe end of January, end of February. So we had internal problems as well in relation to the report itself. And when we invited us to come before the committee, we were busy finalizing the report. And that's why we were expected to say the report was not yet ready.
Why was there no explanation sent to Parliament in terms of the law? That if you are not meeting your deadline, there should be a letter sent to Parliament to explain why and by when the report will be submitted.
Yeah, I think it was an oversight from the Commission as well. So what we were trying to actually do that when we're supposed to send this report, and then I think it was too late for us to actually do that. So we really were supposed to actually do that in the future.
Yeah, the question is why did you not do it? It's just that it was an oversight. Second is not enough. And you are men and women tasked with a serious responsibility. I mean, if you're taking your work seriously, see, you have doctors, you have an advocate. I mean, how do these things just slip past?
I must say, it has happened for the last time because I don't have any way to actually explain, but that's what actually happened. When we're busy with the preparation of the annual report, trying to actually make sure that the report was perfect, there was no expectation of
that. Right. That's fine. I think what it says and the impression it creates across the side is that you're not taking your work seriously. All right. Who was next? It was the Pretoria. Yeah. And then Steel, Mangena, and then yes, I'll go on first.
Chair, thank you very much. I cannot but more support your words of criticism against this entity. I think it's in total shambles. We will hold the acting chairperson to account next year with promises that it will improve. So I'm a little bit concerned, or confused, perhaps is a better word, about the reporting of this institution. I accept that the PFMA is clear, and the Constitution is clear, that all entities and departments must report to the National Assembly, to Parliament. But the route to get to Parliament is my question. If I look at your Act, Section 15 of your Act, it says the Commission shall report to the President at least once every year on the activities and achievements of the objectives, and the President shall cause such report to be tabled from the Parliament. Now, clearly this hasn't happened yet. This current report which we just received now is addressed straight to the Speaker of the National Assembly. The question immediately comes up, what happened in the past? What happened prior to the between the promulgation of your Act and the PFMA, for example, which is a 3-year period? Did you in that period, report straight to the President, or did you report via justice, or what is the situation? My own view, sir, if I can just go slightly further, is that justice and the new department now, women and children, should not be the department responsible. The political responsibility shouldn't lie with them. They be conduit to the funds, the way I see it. Nor should Parliament, although there's a view that Parliament as an institution should take responsibility politically for the institution. I think if we do that, then we conflate the functions of the executive and the legislature. Parliament is a legislative body. If you want some seconds, you want to stop me. Parliament is a legislative body. This is an executive function. And I think there must be further consultation with the Speaker and whoever else is involved to get clarity on the actual political responsibility for this. The way I see it as it stands now, the buck stops with the President of it. Unless there's a different interpretation, unless your Act was changed subsequent to this, I don't know. The current wording of your Act, although the PFMA and the Constitution is clear, they must report to the Assembly. The channel to the Assembly goes to the President's office. And I need clarity on that, whether that's a wrong interpretation or whether there were changes subsequent to this. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
That question actually relates to the response I gave earlier, because the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development is not only the department through which our funds are facilitated and allocated. There is an interpretation in that department, and they have used this section. This is exactly what I was talking about, that in communicating, at least in 2007 and 2008, around the annual report, what was seen to be supreme was the Commission for Gender Equality Act, as it applies. There are a whole range of other issues that are not consistent with TFMA, with the Constitution itself, as well as the Act. So there is a larger responsibility. And I think that this issue has come up. It's important to take it further, because when you sit on the space where I was sitting together with my colleagues, there is also the Department of Justice that reads the Act and interprets the Act in a particular way. Thank you very much.
All right, let's flex that issue around the political accountability, so that it does not hold us back, but it does need to be looked at. Honourable Steve.
Thank you, Chair. We've already had two admissions this morning. One that there was a lack of capacity to produce the financial report, and secondly, there was a lack of capacity to produce an adequate a report of adequate quality, which the Department of Justice deemed to be inadequate. My comment then would be, should we not be declaring the salaries of all of these people fruitless and wasteless expenditure if there's no capacity to produce the document for which they're being paid? But that's a side issue. Chair, I'd like to...
This is a very central issue.
Yeah, well, it's a very central, but there's no question. My question, though, Chair, relates to a very specific area of the report, and it does have general implication. Section 38 of the PFMA relates to the responsibilities of accounting officers, and specifically I want to flag the point about the responsibility, Section H of Section 38, subsection H, to take effective and appropriate disciplinary steps against any official who contravenes or fails to comply, commits an act which undermines financial management, makes or permits an unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, or fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That is the responsibility, Section 38 of the PFMA, for accounting officers. I would also draw the attention of the Commission to Section 37, which relates to acting accounting officers. During the vacancy, the functions of accounting officer must be performed by the official acting in the place of that accounting officer. So whether full-time or accounting, nobody can say the buck doesn't stop with me. Acting accounting officers are responsible for implementing every part of Section 38 of the PFMA. Now, Chair, my question relates to the fact that throughout the Auditor General's report, we have on a number of occasions the phrase, I was not provided with information to indicate that management has taken any criminal or disciplinary steps as a consequence of such irregular expenditure. In other words, we have a direct violation of the PFMA. And for every one of these instances that are mentioned in the AG's report of the failure to take disciplinary action, I would like the acting CEO to explain and to account for their failure to implement the act. Thank you.
Why has there been no action taken against people who have contravened the law? Unless if you'd want to tell us something different.
Let me start, Chair, and then I'll hand over to you to do it. As a commission, when these issues, these irregularities were identified, we actually informed Parliament, the Speaker and the Deputy Speaker, and we commissioned, even asked them to actually commission the forensic audit, and there is a forensic audit going on, and we've been informed that this week the report is going to be available next week. And also the public protector has been investigating some of this. And what is going to happen is that the forensic audit is going to actually highlight and actually give us a report on which all this will be actually highlighted, and so they'll be able to actually take action. But I'll actually hand over to, but there are two reports that are actually waiting within the commission to actually look at them and actually take action if they see that there's really an irregular action that has been taken by some individual within the commission. But I'm asking you to also actually appreciate on that.
All right.
And thanks, Chairperson. Yes, we acknowledge that at the time when the AG undertook this process, there were not as yet processes put in place in terms of getting the monies back from or even attempting, you know, to engage with individuals who are responsible for that kind of expenditure. However, we have seen instituted some legal actions against some of the parties whom we have realized, or whom as the commission we feel that are responsible. And I would also want to reiterate that, as the acting chairperson has indicated, there is a process of forensic by the AG, and we're hoping that when we receive the recommendations that are contained in that particular report, that we will need to institute criminal proceedings against the people who would be identified in that particular report. We haven't as yet received that particular report, and
Scott, are you doing a forensic audit?
Currently, the matter outstanding on that forensic audit is the management responses to the issues that have been identified in the audit. As soon as we receive the responses and the comments that we requested, we will evaluate them and work towards finalizing the report. I understand from the team that that is going to happen during the month of April.
Okay. Well, going back to the question of Honorable Steele, we are happy that there is a forensic audit, but you know, from where we're standing or where we're seated, that closing the door after the horse has already bolted, I think the provisions of the Act are that you must put in place systems to prevent, not to run after the things after they're stolen. And I think the question should actually have been answered in the context of why were there no measures in place to prevent fraudulent and corrupt activities that have taken place. To the extent that people will commit criminal acts because there are no systems in place to detect and prevent these activities from happening. Why have there been no systems in place to ensure that these things not happen, because I'm sure Honorable Steele, if I get to where Section 38 actually talks to that, the responsibility of the accounting office. Why were these measures not in place? Because their absence is actually a violation of the PFMA.
Moving forward, we have.
All right. You're not responding to my question. Again.
Dear President, I'm really made to believe that when assets are put on paper, they explain very well that what kind of a person do we want to do the job that is being advertised. Now, I'm asking myself a question where I am. As they say, they don't have capacity. They were not capacitated. I know capacity is something that really goes for a long time before some of us could understand what it actually means. But a skilled person will understand what her or his job is. Now, it says to me, I'm sure they got over Ramaysela sitting somewhere and said, Ramaysela, come and work with us. We'll help you. Then when the Auditor General comes, they also think that the Auditor General was unable to do his job. That's why they are now trying to stand behind and read and say that, no, the Auditor General delayed to bring the report to us and all that. I don't think that is really correct. The thing is that when people are hired, we must make sure that we hire people who really know what it is that they are coming to do. As the chairperson is saying, when the horse has already run away, it's difficult to go after it and say that, give us our money. But when the horse is still in the stable and we've got everything in there to make sure to prevent it from running away, it won't get out of the crawl and run away. Thank you.
All right. I want to check with Ms. Majagi, because I was looking at the
2007, 2008 report, it also says the same thing. I was not provided with sufficient audit evidence. I was not provided with sufficient audit evidence. What was happening? Why did we have this state of affairs? Because it appears that he just inherited a situation that was like that, and it remained just like that.
Thank you, Chair. And maybe just to indicate that personally, it pains me to see the situation as being like it, as it is today. And I do understand because of the fact that for a long time, the CGE has not really managed to operate with proper structure. Without the CEO, without senior management, like it has been indicated that people have been acting in the positions that they are occupying at the moment. I've seen this annual report for the first time about 2 days ago, and I looked at the audited financial statements, and I think it would be important to note that I was not part of this audit. This audit took place after I had been suspended in April 2008. Though the period that is actually being looked at, part of the period is, or the entire period is the period of my stay at the meeting. What I found very fascinating in terms of the comments of the
auditor. It's not disturbing, please. I'm sure you wanted to say what I found disturbing.
Yes. Was the statement that they were not provided with, as I'm looking at page 51, that actually
2007, 2008,
it talks about the basis for the disclaimer of opinion. And when you look at
page 51, 52, 53, 54,
everywhere say that it was not, the Auditor General was not provided with sufficient information. Look at number 5, it goes on under donor funding, it goes on operating expenditure and finance costs, and look at 8, I was not provided with sufficient audit, property plan, equipment and intangible assets, I was not provided with sufficient evidence. Trade and other, like that is continued up to page 54. And then it ends with a disclaimer of opinion that means because of the significance of the matter described in the basis for the disclaimer of opinion paragraph, I have not been able to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence to provide a basis for an audit opinion on the financial statements of the Commission. And basically what it tells me is that the audit process did not actually go well because there are certain processes that are supposed to take place starting from the audit plan that is actually approved by the Commission. And the fact that when an audit is taking place, information needs to be provided to the auditors, let alone the fact that the financial statements need to be made available 2 months after the end of the financial year. So here, I was not part of the process. When I left on the 21st of April, the audit had not begun. The financial statements had not been drafted yet. And the point that I want to actually emphasize is that previously, we have submitted in time all financial statements to the Auditor General. We have managed to get the books of the Commission on Gender Equality audited, all of them with reports that were unqualified.
So when you were suspended, you left all the documents in the office?
And I do have annual reports here that are actually brought, which is proof of what I'm talking about. It's all the previous and annual reports and financial statements during my tenure at the CGE that were timely tabled in Parliament,
And I've heard earlier the question about the section 15 of the Commission on Gender Equality Act from Honourable Member Pretorius as to how is the CGE supposed to table reports in Parliament. Indeed, we were tabling via the Office of the President, but what we used to do was to send copies as a way of tabling to the Department of Justice as a conduit for the receipt of funding. We send a copy to the Presidency, and we send a copy to Parliament. Why we send also to the Department of Justice, we're depending on them logistically to actually help facilitate the process of tabling in Parliament, and that's why we have managed to successfully in the past table the reports in Parliament.
All right. Very much. I'll come to you, Comrade Roy. I have two members, and then the chairperson, and then I'll come to you, Comrade Roy.
Thank you, chairperson. I'm sorry, chairperson, that I was wanted before you. The question that I'd like to ask, because I'm really disturbed, you know, when it comes to the CGE, we spoke about the late submission of a financial statement to the Auditor General. But in the other thing is this too, if you look at the PFMA, when it comes to the accounting officer, you know, you spoke about 2 months, the statement within 2 months to the Auditor General. The Auditor General takes them on to, because they did not submit the relevant documents to Treasury to enable Treasury to prepare a consolidated report. And I think that replied to that too, because when it comes to disclaimer on page 16, the Auditor General under point 6.3, when it comes to the Public Finance Management Act, it speaks about the lack of budget preparation and monitoring framework during the audit. It was noted that the Commission did not submit the report as required by the PFMA section 44 A and C to Treasury. So I think that accounts to that too. And then I'll agree with the members, our members, that the accounting officer has failed in the responsibility, you know, when it comes to Section 58. And I think what is important, I'm not sure whether it's important for this meeting, but for our meeting, where we need to have a recovery plan in place, you know, that you can check the CGE, because they're now under our portfolio committee, whether they are doing their work properly.
Right. I'm sure the chairperson can flag that one, because then that will be for the portfolio committee. Mm-hmm. Come to check.
Thank you, Chair. I would have loved the former chair to explain what poor quality meant, poor quality of the report that actually caused such a delay. And I would have loved to ask the CGC itself whether do you now have capacity currently? And thirdly, taking into account that you did not present a report, I think the report was going to assist us to assess the work that was done by the CGE. Now, in the absence of the report, did you finally deliver on your mandate?
All right.
Just a point of order, just a quick one.
Yeah.
Looking at the report 2007-08, this report is not fine. This report, therefore, cannot be official. We cannot even begin to engage on this report. Huh? 0708 report. Not signed. Unless if my eyes are misleading me. Page 16 of the report. Not signed neither by the CEO or acting CEO or by the chairperson. So, to what extent are we going to engage on this report? Because where I came here, I was moving from the premise that we don't have reports 07, 08, or 08, 09. We still have these copies, but one of the copies, 07, 08, is not signed. So now we may run through a danger here of engaging to a report which is not official. Can I get the clarity here? Because the reference to this unsigned report by this committee will be illegal.
Well, I wanted to talk to that. We only, from admin, only got about 30 copies. Yeah, and they are finished. But on the issue that is raised by community, this report has been submitted to Parliament. I just did not see the ACC that sent them to us when the documents are submitted. They submitted to the Speaker. And then they get referred to our health committee. I think it is not a... It is bad that they are not signed, but their names of persons there and the persons are here. Maybe what we may need to check is why they were not signed by the people who are mentioned here. Nomboni Sokafa, Jenny Hicks, Dileka, Loilan, were the acting chief executive officers. Why are these reports not signed?
Mr. Person, I'm not in a position to answer that question because the report that was sent to the Department of Justice was a copy that was signed. So I don't know. I was not part of producing this particular report.
Is there an explanation? Just want to check with someone who is current.
I'm going to be frank here. And the commissioners are going to. I think when we had a discussion about who's supposed to sign the report and when the report was produced, the Chairperson has already resigned this one. And there is a feeling that the one, and Mr. Chair says what I mean, the feeling from that the other report that was sent to the Department of Justice. Was not seen by other commissioners. So, but the information here, all of us agree that it's supposed to go to the other report. But it was not signed, and I think it was not signed because some people were not, they felt, I think that explains this. We had a number of executive officers in that particular year. On the 21st of April, two commissioners were acting, which is the same thing that is known. After that, another acting CEO was appointed, who resigned within 1 or 2 months, and we also tried to actually approach the Department of Justice, and the chief director from the Department of Justice said
that. Come down to the point, why are these reports not signed? I mean, nobody because they're sitting here next to you. Why did you not sign the report?
But Chairperson, link to that, Mr. Shozi is saying, I'm on the floor, can I have the attention? I'm on the floor, this is not a stupid question, unless if you don't like it.
Talk.
I'm saying, Chairperson, the report that Mr. Shozi is referring to, that was sent to the Department of Justice, is it the same report as this one, or there's a different report altogether? Is it the same report that the one that was sent to the Department of Justice? Is it exactly the same report? The one that was signed by the former chairperson?
Yeah,
it's on your mind.
Yeah, the former chairperson is saying it's the same report, but
I don't know.
Yes, I really don't know, Chair. And then I think only
because they just said that the report that went to the Department of Justice was not seen by all commissioners.
Isn't it?
Right. So we're not sure whether it's the same report or not. But I don't want us to spend a lot of time around this. Why has this not been signed?
There was a decision that the report that was given to the Department of Justice was the report that was the same as this report. The chief director to the Department of Justice would be in a better position, perhaps, to give a copy of that and verify that. Now, this report, I have not seen it. I would assume that it's coming from an electronic file and it simply has been run from the machine. That report which went to the Department of Justice was circulated and emailed to all commissioners. They had it in an electronic file because the issue that had to be taken into consideration was that the report was late already, therefore it did not justify special training.
All right. Acting CEO, can you talk to us what we see on your face?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure. When I took office in June 2009, I started to interact directly with the office of the AG. And at that point, I had received a draft document from the AG, which we then worked on to produce what is now before us. So I'm just a bit...
But why is this report not signed?
It's not signed, Chairperson, because...
You did not give it to her, she refused to sign. I mean, it should be that simple. Why should we be running in circles? You did not send it to her to sign.
Well, it wasn't sent for her to sign. The forward is the forward that Ms. Gazan drafted, but we never sent it to her. And I'm not too sure because I haven't seen the one that has been tabled with the Department of Justice, as we've been told.
All right.
I'm sorry to waste your time. The issue is that this is probably one and the same report which was sent to the Justice Department. Why then was, which was signed by Ms. Gaza and whoever was responsible. If the report is the same, there's no fundamental difference from that report and the one. Why was it so difficult to take it to Ms. Gaza and let her sign? And the other person was supposed to, if the report is the same as the one which was sent to the Department of Justice. Why was it so difficult? Just to get her, it wasn't difficult to get her here, I suppose. She wasn't ready to come here. It was not difficult. You have a conduct for her. Why was it difficult to send the report for a simple thing, signature, a report which is there already, a copy of it which is at the Justice Department? That is where my difficulty is.
Well, I want us to move forward. It is part of the many difficulties in relation to people doing their work in that institution that we have thus far identified.
it does not reflect good on you that you submit a report in Parliament that is unsigned. I think you should know better that if you send something that is unsigned, no one can take responsibility for it. Sign to acknowledge and confirm that this is our work and we can be held accountable for it. So it goes back to all these things. I think Memangena spoke to it. The people that were working with the institution, how are they appointed? What skills do they have? What is their understanding of their responsibility? I think that is the point that is being reiterated. And I think there are two points now that have come up which talk to that kind of challenge and difficulty. Taking our work seriously. Doing things in a way that suggests that we know our work, we understand it, we love it, we respect it, and we're up to it.
All right. But Jefferson, before you move on, I know you want to move on. The question of the ownership, who then owns this document? Unsigned document, who is owning this document? Because that is where our engagement is supposed to be. Who is going to take the ownership of this document? That is the first one. But the second point is linked to it. Even the legality of engaging on an unsigned document. Because I cannot be party to that. I cannot be party to engage on a document where nobody is taking a responsibility or the ownership of it. I can't do that. If I can get it, that quick answer, who is taking the ownership of it, and that will be on our side to decide whether are we going to continue engaging. Because my issue was that if we are going to go on with this hearing, of which we are determined to do, but let us not make a reference to an illegal document.
Ms. Gatsa wants to respond, yeah?
As the chairperson of the CGE at that time, I take responsibility for the report, the annual report of 2007 and 2008. I shall endeavor to make available, I'm surprised because Mr. Johan Johnson is here, and he's from the Department of Justice. He was the acting CEO also and CFO at this time. I think he's in a position to verify whether this report is the same as the other one. But let us not speak about probabilities. Organizationally, institutionally, ethically, I take responsibility for the 2007-2008 report. I shall endeavor, with the assistance of the Department of Justice, to make available the signed copy that was sent to the Department of Justice. Should it be necessary, therefore, to make questions on that report, I would be very much willing to be available. Thank you.
All right. Comment Roy?
I don't even deal with this point. Okay. But I must tell you I have a difficulty. I think that with hindsight, we have made a mistake in not having clearly designated focus areas. Because the feeling I'm getting is we are shooting from the hip in all directions. And I think we are beginning to lose focus, in fact. And so I may even start losing focus by perhaps repeating questions that others have asked long ago, because there's no proper train, you know, from question to follow-up to question. But be that as it may, let me attempt to go back to my concern that there appears to be no seriousness on the part of the Commission when it comes to disciplinary measures and even criminal measures against people who have clearly broken the law. I don't know why you've got to wait for a forensic audit to start taking action against people, Chairperson. Let me give you one or two examples. In terms of Section 86, it is a criminal offence. An offender is liable to up to 5 years in prison for contravening Section 38 of the PFMA, which says that you must have an internal audit function and you must have an audit committee. What does the AG find? He finds that in 2007-08, there was no audit committee. In 2008-09, there was no audit committee. He finds that in 2007-08, there was no internal audit function.
in 2008-09, no internal audit function. So there was no internal control for all of this time. Why must we wait for a forensic audit? Why did we apply Section 86 and criminally charge people responsible who were responsible for implementing the section that have not done so? Why would they hide behind a forensic audit, which won't uncover this aspect of what has not been done, which we already know? Why has there been so much inactivity when it comes to people who clearly broke the rules? I don't know who I'm asking the question. I'm not too sure who's answering for what anymore.
I will direct your question. I've got it. The acting chairperson and former chairperson, the acting CEO and former CEO, why did we not have an audit committee as well as a functioning internal audit unit? Yeah, I'll start with you, Ms. Majak.
Thank you, Chair. For the financial year 2007-2008, we had an audit committee with Tite Mutule as the chairperson, whom I would actually suggest that SCOPA communicate with.
And the internal audit unit? Did you have an internal audit unit?
We had internal audit, yes.
Yes, Chivani?
Chairperson, I have a little challenge in terms of the former CEO, the way she's responding. Firstly, while we were dealing with the 2008, it seems that she does have a contradicting view in terms of what the AG is reporting. She said she was disturbed, she was fascinated, and the first step and she agreed, or because of the way the AG is putting things into perspective in terms of their brief. And now she's saying the same thing. And what is it that you should believe? Because if you go to contradict on what is written down in terms of your report during your tenure, and now you come and say that you don't understand, yes, we've got the internal control, but in paper, there's nothing. I'm just getting over to that. Can
you
sort it out?
Getting fascinated.
No, it's that.
Why, let's take it further, why is it that in this annual report, there is no report of the audit committee?
Chair, you will recall that I've actually indicated that at the time of the audit, I was already out of the CTE. I left the CTE on April the 26th. So when this audit of the report that has been tabled before you took place, I was not.
And I said, okay, fine. Let me check with the chairperson. I think that's fine. Let's just say, before I come to the Auditor General, why is there no report of the audit committee? Was there a functioning audit committee?
Could I request the Deputy Chairperson and Ms. Leila to answer that question, Chairperson?
Why? I mean, a simple one, the yes or no.
Because I think they are able to give a better answer. I would argue that yes, but there was also a committee that was under the construction. That is why I'm requesting with due respect that they give the answer.
Okay. Was there an audit committee? And anyway, why is there no report of the audit committee in this annual report?
Chair, we have a commissioner who sits in the audit committee. I'm not asking the part of that, but I'll ask Commissioner Reidan to
Thank you, Chair. The audit committee that was there in 2007-08, their term was expiring after April, I think in June. And they just resigned. And then a process of getting another audit committee took about 2 to 3 months to get another audit committee up and running. In that time, we had contracted SABNC to also provide the internal audit services. But when the auditor general was auditing, and we raised that issue that during that period there was internal audit, although it was outsourced, they said it cannot be counted as if there was internal audit, because there has been a break between having an internal audit committee and the outsourced service provider. So we sort of speeded up the process of getting an internal audit committee, and we maybe it was an oversight that in this report of 2007, if we could not get a report from the former audit committee chairperson, Mr. Chuan.
It cannot be an oversight. I mean, you can't kill a person and say, no, it was a mistake. I mean, these are legal requirements. You see, it brings back that saying, how are we even serious with our work? Or we just take it in vain. I want to check now with 0809, Ms. Gus, because I wanted you to respond and you send me to other people. Now we have more information. Okay?
Chairperson, there is a difficulty I have to concede that I'm having, and a certain constraint in answering the questions. Because the questions that are asked by SCOPA are obviously related to your focus area. And yet, the inability to function or not function satisfactorily and according to the law is also related to a whole range of other issues that were happening in the institution. And I think outside of that context, it is difficult to say yes or no. I'm not sure how we have this conversation where we can in fact give the fuller picture of the level of dysfunctionality and the attempts that were being made to address that, and how therefore in that space of flux you had a report like this, and a report like this, and a continuing number of crises that are happening in the institution. That's the first thing that I would like to put forward. Secondly, I also find very constrained in answering the question frankly and openly. The deputy chairperson,
there should be no constraints in Parliament. It's frank and open. That's what we want. Anything less than that is a waste of our time.
The deputy chairperson, the SNCO has alluded to processes that are linked to the forensic audit. Now, you have a situation where the Auditor General's report, now I'm talking about 2008 and 2009, made certain findings which, as the Honourable Member correctly said, are criminal findings. Now, the forensic audit, for example, is undergoing, is also looking at some of these issues. Now, because of the nature of the alienation, and I want to put that very frankly, between myself and the Commission for Gender Equality and litigation that I have started on in relation to the Commission for Gender Equality, it is impossible for me to accept the list of some of these issues that are said to be criminal, because I believe that my response and my evidence that I have already forwarded to the Auditor General contradicts this finding. So I don't know how we proceed with this conversation. Do we take the financial aspect of it outside of the context, or do we try and manage? I have no idea. I'm looking for help.
All right. No. We want to talk to the financial extent, and when we have time, let us have context. The point here is that if you did not have, if you say audit committee, internal audit, what would like to know is, did you have it or not? Why did you not have it? If there's a regular expenditure, why did it occur? Who did it? What happened to that person? Because those are specific acts committed by individuals who are within the employ. The issue of the context in terms of capacity, in terms of relations, in terms of reporting, and the bigger picture, I think that becomes something else. And
generally speaking, the portfolio committee is always best positioned to look at the biggest context of the issue. Now, I want to move to the 2008-2009 report and check with the acting CEO and the acting chairperson, why do we not have the report of the audit committee in this report? Because all reports that come to Parliament have reports of the audit committee.
While they're looking for the answer, I just want to go back to the question of responsibility. We know now the commissioners are responsible from a certain perspective. The former chairperson was there until April 2009. So you have to answer on behalf of the commission for everything that happened before that. But in terms of the head honcho, administrative head honcho, who was the head of administration, the former CEO resigned or was suspended on the 21st of April 2008. That's what we've been told. The new acting CEO, the acting CEO was appointed in June 2009. So my first question is, what happened? Who was the head of administration of the CGE between the date of suspension and the date of appointment of an acting CEO? Did they not have a CEO at all? That's number one. Number two, is the former CEO has told us that she went in April. So she, as far as I'm concerned, is not responsible for what the Auditor General says here, that I could not find documents, I could not do this, and I could not do everything else, because she was not there. It should have been the new administration which the Commission should have put in place after she was suspended. And my third point is, we need to know at some stage on what grounds was the former CEO suspended, what was the outcome of that suspension, how relevant it is to the financial statements and the findings of the Auditor General, so that we have a fuller picture.
No. There's a question that I want to respond. I don't want us to have a general rumbling and talk.
Chairperson, I'd like to know that if the chairperson has a litigation against the Commission on Gender Equality, evidence is being given at this moment, can that chairperson, the ex-chairperson, sit in this meeting? I just want the ruling. Thank you.
Well, that's a difficult one, because we have not faced that kind of a situation before. But seeing that we don't know what the issues of litigation are, and I'm not sure if that is what we want to go into. I would imagine that since the commission that is being litigated against knows, I'm sure that the acting chairperson and the acting CEO would know and would actually seek to defend the institution if they feel that the issues we are talking to might jeopardize the legal process. So I would say let's leave it at this and continue. And I want to request Comrade, I think Comrade Roy is right. Let us be focused on the substantive issues in the report. I appreciate that the general challenge of the Commission make all of us to just feel a little hidden about the general thing. But let us remain a bit. All right, I have a stiff neck, but I'll try.
Yeah, my question hasn't been
okay.
Answered yet.
Right. Can you repeat your question? Focus. Don't comment.
Focus question is, we've got a former CEO, we've got an acting CEO. Between the time the former CEO was suspended on the 21st of April until June 2009, who was the head? Who was in charge of administration? Who can we hold accountable? Who can answer questions? Because there seems to be a lacuna there. That's number one. Number two, I want to submit that the former CEO cannot be blamed for any of the documentation not being forwarded for the 2008-2009 report to be completed, because she was not there. So if she is not to be blamed, who is to be blamed? Can the commission do that?
Right. Who was acting CEO between April 2008 until June 2009?
Chair, I will fill that question to the two acting CEOs who were acting at the time. But I must just say for the record that when we suspended the CEO, Pierre took a decision to appoint two commissioners to act as core acting CEOs. But
two people acting as core CEOs. Who appointed them?
The commission.
The commission said and appointed two people to be core CEOs.
When that decision was taken, when we suspended the CEO, the understanding was that the investigation of the CEO was going to take 2 to 3 weeks, and then we'll be able to finalize the issue. And that was not the case. But I would ask that was not the case, and the investigation took a long time, and the finalization of the documentation and the recommendations, allocation, and the report also took some time, and then it was divided. The final two decisions as well to actually look for another thing.
Or maybe you can actually go to the second part of the question. We'll come back to the first part. What were the allegations against the then CEO, and what was the outcome of that protracted investigation?
We have a report, Chair. We actually asked, it's called the Health Commission report, we also sent it to Parliament, but there are allegations, a number of allegations against the, or from the staff members of the CGT. They sent the report, they sent the memorandum to the former chairperson, that was actually discussed on the 21st of April, and in that meeting, it was said the CEO should be suspended, and the two acting CEOs were actually appointed. And the report came from the people who were investigating the report. The CEO, us, and CGE made input into that, and also put their own submission into the investigation. Staff members as well wanted to
understand what was the outcome. Finally,
the outcome was a report, and there were allegations against the CEO. But we actually proceeded to the disciplinary hearing. And once we proceeded to that plenary as well, without we terminated the CEO's services, and the CEO took us to court because, based on the report, it did not follow at that point, at that time, follow it, it's not a hearing. We got a legal opinion on that issue, and we actually terminated the service of the CEO, and the CEO took us to the High Court, and the High Court expressed that it should be reinstated and actually follow the disciplinary procedure. We did that, and we asked for another legal opinion to say, and we could really see that this was taking long, and the litigation, and the CEO was also continuing litigation on this, and the legal opinion advised us to actually settle the CEO, and we actually settled the CEO in November last year. So it was like taking, it was litigation after litigation, litigation after litigation. And there is a report, and in terms of the settlement on legal issues as well, in terms of that, the report is available, and I hope if the scope wants to actually, one can actually submit to the scope.
How did you take legal action? Did you have legal advice? I see there's an advocate here.
I didn't get that, chapter.
So how come you took illegal decisions? That led you to ultimately lose the court. Because the money you
we wasted on all those purposes, with fruitless expenditure. We should have known better and followed procedures. Because then the next question here will be, how much did you follow? And who took the decision, you know, that led to, you know, to all these things? And who must repay that money? Because had you followed sensible and normal processes, you would not have incurred all those costs. It comes back to that. People were there just to, you know, take their way. Because they did not appreciate the responsibility. Now you say there were two acting CEOs at the time of the audit.
Yeah, Commissioner is going to respond to that.
Okay. All right. No, I think what they wait. What the honorable thing wanted to establish was who were the people who were acting CEOs who then should have provided the audit evidence to the auditor general. So you say were two acting CEOs.
Alright. Chairperson, plenary took a decision upon the suspension of our former CEO to subsume the office of the CEO into the office of the chairperson. Two commissioners, myself and Commissioner Loyalani, were requested by plenary to jointly assume functions of the CEO. I was tasked with being responsible with the implementation of our strategic plan, the activities of the organization, and Commissioner Loyalani was tasked with overseeing the finance and HR responsibilities of the organization. And we acted together with the Office of the Chairperson until the period of December 2008. During that time, we were supposed to be in place for a short period of time while the investigation of the CEO was concluded. But as our acting chair alluded, this process dragged on. We became concerned as commissioners that we were having to remain in this role and felt that we needed to step back into the realm as of commissioners. And a decision was made to bring on board an external person to assume the function of acting CEO. So from January, we had a third party come on board, Mr. David Sitsedi, who was contracted to be our acting CEO. He lasted, and I just need to confirmation of the date he resigned in, March 2009, at which stage we then appealed to the Department of Justice, to assist us, and we had Mr. Johan Jansen brought on board to assist us. So we were in a very peculiar situation. I would like to also respond to the second question that Honorable Singh requested, stated that the former CEO could not be held responsible for non-provision of information to auditors. I do have to say that as ourselves, Commissioner Loyalani and I, Commissioner Loyalani was working with the Finance Department and the Office of the Auditor General, I do feel that we do need to look at the role of the CEO prior to that, in that 2007 and 8 financial year, because we should have seen systems, information management systems, finance record systems, and capacity in place so that when auditors stepped in the period April, once she was there, information was readily available. But I'm afraid the situation we found was that the capacity was not there, that the systems were not in place, documents and information were not readily available, all of which was part of the action and the investigation into the CEO at that stage. So I find it hard to draw a line and say, because that person was not there, there's no responsibility. We found a situation where there was no capacity, no management systems, no information readily available. Thank you, Chair.
I wanted to propose that we move. That's what I was really to say. Let's focus like the issue on the floor was about the audit committee.
seems as if there's been a dispute because the AG has found that there was no audit committee, and you made a follow-up and you made a follow-up to say why was that the minute that answer was not answered. And then we had to move because I don't think there's a dispute to say that unless we were doubting the credibility of the office of the AG, because according to their findings in both financial years, there was no internal audit. There was also no audit committee.
Chairperson,
I wanted to.
May I
ask Torres, unless it's an exigence or point of order?
Before you do, Chair, may I call for a caucus? We have some issues, pertinent issues, to discuss as a caucus. Yep, as a committee. Yes.
On the point of information.
Just hang on a minute. I must address the point that is being raised here. I must talk to the point that the comrade has raised, that we need to whisper amongst ourselves. Huh? 5 minutes. Maximum 5 minutes. It is part of our normal practice that the comrades can call for time. Can we please request you just the outside for just 5 minutes maximum, and we will call you back.
Can
thank you.